for the first ever episode of the 7500 Old Podcast with Kirsten Schlewitz.
Hey, everyone.
Gareth Simpson.
Hi.
Andrew Cieslak.
What's going on?
And me, Robert Linton. We're here to talk about the opening to the Villa season, some surprises in the English Premier League, and I think we'll wrap it up today with a little bit of talk about Gabby Agbonlahor and his chances in England. So let's get started with the first seven games. How are you guys feeling about them?
Well, we are unbeaten, so there's that. That's all I got. I think that's what unbeaten means, right?
Well, we lost a bolt that has been massacred by everybody else in the parade, so that's good.
Can we count the Carling Cup? I mean, I don't think I want to count the Carling Cup.
I don't know, but I thought they could do well in it, but then just having lost a bolt and seeing how they played against everybody else, it's hard to make that. I'll get over it.
And putting it in context about how horrible bolt, like, effort to bear it.
Look so bad.
I really hope the guys over at Lion of Vienna aren't listening to this. But,
yeah. They know that they look horrible as well.
They've become self-aware. This is worrisome.
I think they're hitting the whiskey bottles, actually.
The bolt loss was pretty horrible, but otherwise, we're lossless, so... What's been the highlight thus far for you guys? How about you, Kirsten?
Well, I think that there's no question that the highlight is the fact that Barry Bannon is finally starting, since that's what I've been waiting for the past 2 years. So it's great to finally see him actually take on that role, and I hope that McLeish is realizing how much better the squad has looked in the last two games with Bannon in the starting 11.
Yeah, he's looked incredible. What's been the highlight for you thus far, Gareth?
Well, I'm really happy that Peter Mornar has awoken from his year-long coma to start playing football again. It's fantastic. And it's, you know, as strange as it is, that it's like a lot of the support, well, both that and those supporters don't, so like, honestly, it's remarkable that some of the players actually seem to, I mean, Gabby Agbonlahor and Stephen Warnock seem like the most prominent examples of players that genuinely like playing for McLeish for whatever reason. So that's, I mean, it's a reason to be encouraged. It's still not great. Stephen Warnock is still sort of an average left back, but it's better than what we have last year.
And how about you, Andrew? What's your highlight thus far?
I think Gabby's been amazing. He's kind of had to move around a little bit, but he's been awesome. Just busting his ass, scoring. I mean, that's been awesome. And the other thing, I think the back two guys, the center backs, have been good again, which is nice. And I think you can tell that they're happier, like Gareth was saying, they're happier to be playing for a manager that I think they respect or that gets them. And I don't know, they seem to be joined at the hip, and they're both been playing pretty well. They've been warriors, which is great. I'm still very worried about the back situation.
I feel like Richard Dunn is the most last-ditch player in the Premier League. Like, he'll have some really impressive goal line clearances, but that will also lead him into own goals and giving away just stupid penalties, which is why I can never really get behind him even when he's good. He's just terrified.
I hope you're feeling less hatred for him right now, though.
I don't hate him, even though, I mean, it's strange, right? Because I like Fulier and don't like Richard Dunn, but ultimately, I feel like this situation is probably better for the club as a whole.
I think it is. I mean, I talked to someone who knows Richard Dunn, and he just says that it's like a whole weight has been lifted off his shoulders. I mean, we can see it on the pitch, both in the way he plays and also in the fact that he's clearly slimmed down, because he looked like he was hitting the pies a bit too much last season, and probably the pints as well. But yeah.
So, everyone's mentioning this whole thing, the players love McLeish. How unexpected is that?
I mean, I don't actually think it's that unexpected, because, I mean, they're not, the disconnect we have is that they're not Villa supporters, right? So they don't care who McLeish bunch of O'Neill players, and McLeish is very similar to Martin O'Neill's manager, as far as I can tell.
You know who is a Villa supporter, though, who has not been in the starting lineup?
Carlos Cuellar.
No, Mark Albrighton.
Sorry, who?
Mark Albrighton.
I was wondering about that. Because you were live tweeting a reserves game when I was waiting for my passport to be renewed. And I just thought it's so strange because do you remember how great he was in the West Ham game last year? Like the first game of the season before just everything became awful?
Yeah.
He was amazing. And he came basically out of nowhere. And now he's back in the reserve. And I don't get it. Like, he's a really good player when he wants to be playing.
He looked great at a bunch of times last year, too. Like, I think of the Manchester United game that, at home. Great in that, too. I mean, I don't know what happened, but apparently he's just falling off the map completely.
But has he really looked all this great this year? I mean, the few times he's been on the pitch, he's helped a little, but he's also really looked out of his depth a lot of the times, especially if it gets into the defensive part of the game.
And that's what makes me wonder if there is some sort of reverse McLeish effect going on there, not necessarily saying it's stemming from him being a Villa supporter, but it's just something to think about that maybe Albrighton and McLeish aren't the best fit.
Well, maybe the game that McLeish wants to play doesn't really suit Albrighton as a, like, Albrighton is an out-and-out winger. He just runs up and down the touchline over and over, and I don't think McLeish plays with, I mean, maybe there's not a place for someone like Albrighton and what McLeish is trying to do, which would be a tragedy, especially if we ended up, you know, selling him and going on to being somewhere else. But, you know,
yeah.
Feeling like there's a place for him right now, which is frustrating because I really like him.
Yeah, I think we all do.
But I feel like his biggest strength is in the counterattack, and we've seen almost none of that from Villa this year.
Well, I get the impression our current imitation of a counterattack is booted up to Agbonla or just runs the link out and goes to the net. So, like, I was watching highlights of the Wigan game. He's so fast. Ridiculous.
He's just been everywhere. It's been awesome to watch him. It's like night and day last year.
I'm not so sure that's like McLeish thing. Didn't he start to wake up at the back end of last season? Like, he scored that, wasn't it him that scored that goal against West Ham where everyone, like, just exhaled and realized we weren't going to get relegated?
Was it him?
I think it was him. I think he had a header in, like, the last minute of a game that we were going to draw with West Ham. I could be wrong. I think it was at West Ham.
It would have been, yeah.
Yeah, because, yeah.
We all remember the first game where we were.
And then it all went downhill from there.
I know, it's a tragedy. We played really well against West Ham, but we can't play against them at all.
It was his goal.
Yeah, it was. It was a header in stoppage time. Good memory.
So, the guy we kept bringing up while we were trying to get this all working was our good friend Stylian Petrov. Does he have any place left with us?
Well, isn't he still technically the captain? Third, right?
Yes.
We also have nobody play center mid, so kind of have to. I'm kind of stuck with him. There's no depth at center.
And it's and one disappointment for me so far has been Fabian Delph. And
oh my God, yes. Oh.
Yeah, he had such promise. He was not good to get Wigan. Like, he gave the ball away a lot.
He almost got Wigan to score a goal. I think it was Victor Moses.
He just has ridiculously dumb passes that just go to the wrong guy. Like, done it time and time again. Also, I just don't know. I don't know what he's doing out there. He just does not look good.
But it's entirely possible he's out of his depth as well. Like, he's still really young. Spent a lot of time out of his depth.
He has been hurt, yeah. And I think someone suggested that he might not be the best position he's playing for the role. Like, better closer to the front than to the back. But I don't know if that's true or not. Remember, he played left back for a little bit last year when we were so super
thick. Look at him. Fuck that. That was ridiculous. I remember seeing that for the first time, and I'm like, why the hell is Fabian Delph playing left back? He doesn't really have any left back.
It's called desperation.
One, it was rotting in the reserves, then two, refused to play him no matter what happened. I mean, that thing he went to Delph at left back before Warnick says a lot. I probably would be a lot of those guys. He held a grudge. He held it well.
Well, we do have another central midfielder ready to step in, right? He's just injured. What do we think about that?
Which one is?
Yeah, exactly. Isn't he ready to save us?
I know. He set late for us. He got three injuries. He showed up. Oh, like worst loan signing ever.
Yeah, he's out for another month. I thought loan signings were supposed to be cheap replacements, and suddenly we're doing all of his medical work for him.
Very frustrating.
Harry tricked us. Tricked us well.
We've got Steven Ireland if we need him.
Oh, that's right. Hey, let's play Steven Ireland, guys.
I think the next guy in line, honestly, is probably Gary Gardner. I don't think he's going to be big time soon, but I don't think.
Yeah, Darren Clark play midfield? I seem to remember him playing center mid sometimes.
I think he did last year in the injury apocalypse, yeah.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind seeing him out there more often at all.
It sounded like he was playing really well in the reserve match today. Just kind of threatening and making, like, if for some reason he was up by a goal enough to make the Chelsea keeper commit a rash challenge on him, so they were scared.
He's got a good history against Chelsea.
Yeah, that's true. He does. So let's bring him back for that match.
If only we had a world-class or a high-level defensive midfielder instead of a guy who now plays for Olympiacos. Well, Sean McCoon could have been filling that role for us.
It would just be a lot easier if we never saw James Milner, but it's not really worth just crying on a podcast.
No.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
That about sums up James Milner right
there. Yeah.
So, undefeated thus far, have you guys been happy with the way Villa have played?
Well, someone else start on that one.
You know, all I keep thinking about this year of everything that I've watched, I think of that Newcastle game and how unbelievably frustrating it was to watch, but I think about Abaye and just watching that guy play, how cheap he was. That guy. I don't know. I think I love that guy.
Newcastle, I don't think Newcastle is a much bigger club than we are, and yet they buy players from abroad. I mean, there's you posted about Davide Santa, and there's, Johan Cabaye, there's Ted Kiyote, there's Adam Minarza. They buy from other leagues and other countries, and they do all right. So I don't understand why, whatever, if we even have a scouting department, why they don't have players like that.
And they're cheaper. They're cheaper than English players every time, always. Which players are overvalued, not constantly.
Alright, but what if I told you guys, I know we've all been a little frustrated with the slow start and all that jazz, and, you know, I wish we could get some foreigners in here, but if we kept up this pace, we'd be on pace for 60 points for the year, which would have last year put us in 6th place. What would you be happy with that?
Definitely.
I'd be happy, but I would get really tired of waking up early in the morning.
The problem is, if we don't get to play all these like so far, we have to play real teams. It's scary.
Exactly.
Like, I'm just right to death of what Manchester's United and City are going to do to our fullbacks. My God. Remember, when I think of Warnick, and I know it's been done this year, and it's great, but I think of Overton literally just running over and keeping the ball while he just falls down. Like, it was embarrassing. I just can't get it out of my head. It was so and when we play those teams,
yeah. City's our next match after the international break.
And it's away too, right?
It is away.
Yeah, it's away.
Yeah, well, I figure what's going to happen is essentially set up a bunker in front of the goal and just see how many shots we can hit.
Yeah.
Sure, when we see Manchester City, and that's obviously the home match, but it was the Manchester City match and the Everton match. It was basically like, we were just really lucky to get out of there without the score. They got two at will, and then we just had to hope they didn't go in the net.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's going to be like.
Yep, I remember the Everton one really well last four shots.
And that was a much terrifying half.
It was.
Every striker, and Manchester City has, like, 10. So,
right.
You know, where was going to do with your gun?
If anyone knows how to lay down,
you know, I have to say I was really excited when Aguero got hurt, but unfortunately he seems to be ready to go for this week's international matches. So, not that I enjoy seeing people get hurt, but I would have really appreciated him not being available for the match 2 weeks from now.
I would say that as much as I don't love McLeish's style, if there's any manager that I feel comfortable with going into a game as a severe underdog, it's actually McLeish, because if anyone knows how to bunker in and just wait out the draw, it's him.
Yeah, it's not even bunker and counter, it's just bunker.
Bunker and bunker.
But guys,
it's
we...
It's a law firm, too.
Bunker, bunker, and counter.
Alright, so...
Before we get off that topic, actually, as we're talking about our bunkering skills, Villa do have the joint lowest goals conceded in the Premier League this year, so thus far. So that's something. We haven't been beat 7-1 yet.
I think that 2 years ago, too, right? Like, we had a really great Martin O'Neill last year, and that sort of, I mean, it's good, but, I mean, if we have absolutely nothing going forward, which kind of what it seems like, aside from Gabby, is that, I mean, yeah, maybe we get points in recent place, but it's more of a big place.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at the goals out by others. Manchester City has yet to concede goals. That's just, it's great.
Well, except to Napoli, of course.
Well.
Sorry, I just had to throw that in there.
Of course.
City have conceded.
Wait, City have con- at home? Sorry, someone else is trying to interfere with the podcast. No, yes, they haven't conceded at home in the Premier League.
Right. Yeah, it's scary. So yeah, it's gonna be. I don't even know. And that's just right.
So, outside of Villa, who's what are the biggest surprises of the year?
I saw Fernando Torres score a goal. That was pretty exciting.
He scored two.
I know, right? And he got sent off, which was, like, more hilarious than anything.
Did he cry?
I think he did. I'm sure he did. It just seems like something he would do.
It seems like something that would enhance his face.
The
tears. He's
trying to ruin the hair back, but
he does. He's got his vintage Liverpool hair, which I think is that's what's scoring the goal for him.
It really is. He's like, he's Samson, that man.
I think Arsenal has to be considered a surprise if you didn't expect them to be good or great, I guess, this year. I don't think anyone expected 7 points in 7 games.
And
it's gone from funny to just outright depressing. Like, it makes me sad to watch Arsenal medal.
Yeah, it went past the funny, which is unfortunate because it was nice for a while to watch Arsenal fans just totally melting down, but now it's like, oh, I actually kind of feel for you guys.
I think I'm just hoping that the Arsenal's fans are, like, less despicable than maybe that's just me, though. Robert, go ahead.
I would totally agree. The Arsenal fans have never struck me as all that annoying. That said, I hope the meltdown leads to some wonderful tweeting from Ted over at the Short Fuse, because it's been wonderful to watch.
That's true, but he's really going to hate us for mentioning that.
Well, he'll get more Twitter followers, hopefully.
That's true. Follow the Short Fuse. Yeah, it was. It was a lot like that one.
The shot, like the shot from long range that Cillian Petrov always thinks he's taking.
What do you guys make of QPR this year? They're a team that seems to get its ass kicked or do really well and can't make up its mind.
QPR is the one team that Bolton actually beat. I just felt I would get that in there because that might cheer up the Bolton fans. Probably not.
That we couldn't, that makes us said.
We were so close, and then Richard Dunn happened. Right? That was that match?
That was that match.
Okay.
That was, oh boy. But they just strike me as so strange. They can't score at home, and then they go away, and they can beat people that won the world.
Well, there are really weird things of, like, people who, like, journeymen, people with a lot of Premier League experience, that, like, they didn't have that, like, golden hammer stuff, but then they brought in a whole bunch of players, like Joey Barton. Joey Barton is really talented. I mean, occasionally Don Rashford plays well, and that's kind of what their team is, right? Is that if they're in the mood for it, they can
But then you have to look at that scoreline from Sunday, which was Fulham 6, QPR 0. What? No. The Fulham QPR. Exactly. I think that was like the same number of goals Fulham scored all season last year. Oh, they're up to 10. They're up to 10.
Last year.
Yeah, all of last year.
I mean, I think at this point, I don't see Fulham that bad. I don't know if you guys agree or not, but I think Blackburn is fucked. And Wigan's not looking too good either.
I know.
Who else do you guys think is going down? If you had to pick three, I guess.
I don't think QPR drop.
No,
I can't see them keeping up, you know, a team that loses 6-0 to Fulham is not a team that should be in the EPL.
Well, yeah, they haven't done too badly. I mean, all of the newly promoted teams are sitting on 8 points, which is impressive, but, I mean, they always kind of start out brightly, so I think one of those three will probably end up down.
At least one. I mean, you had Blackpool, what, top 10 for a lot of the year.
Right? Yeah.
It gets hard after the first half. It's hard to keep that up. Hot starts are one thing. It doesn't get to keep it up that long. It's a long season. Not that long.
Although I think to a certain degree, Blackpool's approach is what was so unsustainable, right? Like, you can't show absolutely no interest in playing that for a whole
right. our favorite clubs. I mean, there's no point even watching the match at Britannia, is there? It's just going to be awful. Match ball time.
Oh, man.
Sleep in for that one, West Coasters.
I will make sure to do so.
So, any other big surprises in the EPL for you guys? How about the Manchester? Yeah,
I actually like the way that they play. I just can't help wondering if one meltdown sometime in the middle of the season is just going to lead to disaster, which would be amusing.
An unplanned question. I'm sorry. I just thought of this. Talking about the Manchesters. Watching Ashley Young, are you happy or are you unhappy? There you go.
I think I'm happy. I mean, we've discussed this on the blog and post a bit, but I can't stand watching Stuart Downing. I just... I don't know what it is. He didn't put in his time. He acted like an ass. He kind of pretended that he was going to stick with Villa, and then he just walked away, whereas Ashley Young was always like, no, I'm putting off a contract. He made no promises. He did have time with Villa. Yeah, at times he looked like he probably didn't want to be there last season, but to be honest, so did everyone. And now he's getting his chance to shine at a really great club. So I can't hate him.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, we had expected, or not expected, but there was a perception that Ashley Young could have left the summer that Milner left, could have gone to Spurs, but he waited it out, put in another year, and he got so excited. I mean, I feel good for him doing that. I don't feel good about being blindsided by Stuart Downing saying he's not sure he's going to come back to the club, and then bolting for Liverpool. Yeah, it leaves a bad taste in my mouth, especially when you consider how long he's been taking checks from Aston Villa while he was injured.
And it wasn't even so much that he said he wasn't sure and then bolted. It was that he said he wasn't sure and then he said, oh no, I'm staying. And then he took off. That just soured me on him forever, I think.
I personally feel just betrayed by Stuart Downing. It's like getting dumped by your first girlfriend.
Your first Villa love.
You broke my heart, that asshole.
What Rob's looking to do is love like the really players who are never going to leave. Like the really mid-level, just grind it out.
Ooh, love Bay. Love Habib Bay.
We never
I saw him on TV the other day. It was great. I was laughing. Just to see him on the bench. It was great.
How did you know who he was?
Did he have his Ferrari next to him?
He is the punchline to every basketball joke ever told.
Well, besides Dillian Petrov.
Should I just become an Andy Marshall fan?
Oh,
I don't think he's going anywhere.
I never recognize him.
Only of the never.
I don't know if he even played in the... Yeah, he played. He was keeper in the reserves today.
So Guzan does, like, nothing?
Oh, wait, no, it was Guzan. I'm thinking of the bench. He actually was on the bench doing something, sitting there, looking photogenic.
I wonder how much he gets paid. It's got to be decent enough. I mean, it can't be the worst life. You're just doing it the club.
I don't think he makes enough to get the red Ferrari, though. Guzan.
Well, yeah, that's true. That Andy, I'm not sure Andy Marshall actually plays goal. Might just be someone's friend.
Wikipedia tells me he made his unofficial first team debut against Walsall this summer.
But
that's how little he's played for us.
But that was a friendly.
Yep.
I don't think that really counts. Yeah, he probably is someone's friend.
His aunt is writing his Wikipedia, which is very proud.
Good news, he was the Coventry City Player of the Year in 2006-2007.
Well, that's probably what allowed him to take a shot at the big time with Aston Villa.
Yeah, and before that, in 2000 and 2001, he was the Norwich City Player of the Year.
Doesn't Coventry City hate us?
Probably because we took their keeper.
And just smashed him. We're like Manchester City.
Guys, I would actually recommend going to Wikipedia and looking at Andy Marshall's picture, which I totally ignored. This goes for anyone listening, because, wow, it's a work of beauty.
Also, while you're at it, go to Barry Bannon. Oh my god!
Somehow I missed that.
You're not. I've had nightmares.
But guys, he is married to an ex-model, so that's got to say something about someone enjoying those looks.
Hey guys, do you remember that time we did a podcast and an Andy Marshall stared to us and we all died afterwards?
Oh my god.
I'm going to put that as somebody's screensaver at work tomorrow. That's my thing.
Andy Marshall's Wikipedia page is going to get so many hits when this, and his aunt is going to wonder what's going on.
Married to a law graduate and ex-model.
All that missing it, and we're very proud of him.
disappointed in our viewers. or listeners or whatever if someone doesn't just put that into this wiki page. Oh, dear God.
This is the most Andy Marshall has ever been talked about in his lifetime.
That, ladies and gentlemen, is what you can expect from our fine podcast.
Wow, that is fine. Okay.
I want to go to the next topic, but Andy Marshall is staring at me. He's 36.
I don't think I realized that.
He's made a man. 95
appearances
in the moment.
Wow.
Is he still playing for them?
Possibly.
Have some regional troubles.
Wow.
It's a canary. Not even for the pitch. I thought they'd stay home. You're so creepy, I can't even look at
you. He'll be on that thing that Sky Smash does, where they let the fans do the commentary.
Oh, the fans, though?
Yeah, he'll be the Norwich representative.
That is the worst show ever. That's not... They still show up like that. You guys just scream at each other the whole time.
I always think it'd be a great concept. I'd watch American football like that.
Well, we won't get a lose. The one this year, which those are always fun.
Yeah.
Unless we meet them in the FA Cup.
Yeah, you said it. Now it's going to happen.
Yeah.
And it won't be terrible. It'll be better than meeting Blackburn.
Oh, God.
There you go.
Hold on. I've got to disagree. I think it will be terrible because you remember the last time we faced them in a cup competition. That was terrible.
This year, I want to play Blackburn as much as possible. I'm sorry, I don't care.
That's fair. Then again, we would have probably said the same thing about looking at how that worked out.
Yeah.
Sorry. So the last thing I had on my list for talking topics is Gabby in England, since it seems the only thing on news now today. He's ruled himself out with some sort of a back injury. When do you guys think he makes his break back in?
I think it depends on... Well, okay, so there's two things. There's a difference between Gabby Agbonlahor actually seeing the pitch and Gabby Agbonlahor getting a call-up to England. I think if he keeps playing this way, he'll be called up for the next England match. But will he get in the squad?
How would he fit into the England squad right now? I don't know a lot about them, but with Bent and Rooney and Ashley Young, I don't see where Gabby fits in.
Oh, you forgot about Andy Carroll, who has done so much this season and definitely deserved a call-up.
Oh, yeah. So, Andy Carroll, you can play a role that Gabby can. Andy Carroll is just essentially because Patrick Capello stopped wanting to call Peter Crouch on the phone. I mean, what Gabby has to hope for is that eventually, I guess the place he would be taking the squad is Jermaine Defoe, but that this Jermaine Defoe didn't play a lot in the first place, so I imagine, Rooney's only going to start, and it's going to be either Rooney playing off it, probably, or off someone calling Carroll, so it's not really a whole lot of room for Gabby to fit in the starting lineup, except when he decides he wants to move the win.
Yes. And, well, England has been playing, surprisingly for Capello, 4-6-0. But then you have the same problem. It's not like Gabby's going to replace Ash. So if they switch to a 4-3-3, is he going to take the place of Stuart Downing on the left? What do we think? Yeah.
Realistically, no, he's not. It's not a true winger, whereas Downing is. Gabby is, as silly as it sounds, he's almost best fit right now to that Trey Cortista role, which isn't exactly what it means, but that's the closest thing I can think of right now.
And it's definitely not something that England used.
I just don't see how he fits in. I mean, it'd be nice to get the call up to be there, but I don't see how. Just not the way they play. His role just doesn't fit, but it's, I don't see.
Sorry, I'm just trying to figure out how close England are to qualification right now in Euros and wondering if maybe there'll be a throwaway game where others play. Well, it looks like if they simply draw against Montenegro this week, then England will qualify. But that's their last game in Euro qualification. So I guess friendlies? What? It's not? Hang on. Hold on. I need to consult with an England supporter. It says right here they have two games left to England's one. Are you disagreeing with Euro? Okay, sorry. Next time I will do my podcast in a separate room. Yes, England have one qualification match left, and so I would assume there'd be friendlies before actual Euros. But at the same time, Capello probably wants to use those friendlies to train his squad that he's going to take to the Euros. But something that I think that we forget a lot is that Gabby is still really young. I mean,
how old is he? Yeah, that's a good question. Look that up.
Sweet, another Wikipedia picture.
24. Wow. That is hard to believe.
Yeah, that is. He's been with us since forever.
Since 2005, to be precise. So, and one of the wonderful things is that Gabby's always said he wants to play his entire career for Villa. Now, whether that'll actually happen or not, who knows, but that would be amazing. So, only 24, it might not happen for him this year, but there's the chance that he can go to Brazil.
Yeah, he's got time. I can't believe he's only 24.
I remember because he was, a young player of the year, Eggball Moore was also nominated because he had a really, really good season that year. He's young.
You guys realize he has a chance to pass Dwight Burke as the all-time Aston Villa EPL goal scorer this year?
Yes, I do, because I am also looking at Wikipedia.
How did you know?
I also enjoy the fact that he has a brother named Charisma.
Wow.
Sounds like he should have, like, a tramp stamp.
I think I'm just going to start calling Gabby Charisma because it's more fun.
Let's do it. I'm down.
All right.
And Charisma plays for the Bull Hall Swifts.
Whoever the hell they are.
The Swift Hall Bull Hall?
What?
Bull Hall Swifts.
I can't believe you guys
there
know what Bull Hall Swifts are.
Tamworth, in the suburb of Bull Hall. It's possible we're pronouncing that wrong.
Possible. They do play in the Midland Football Combination Premier Division.
Ah.
See, things that you all never thought you would learn about when tuning into the 7500 podcast.
It's a feeder into the Midland Football Alliance.
Whatever that is.
Yeah.
I'm sure Charisma will make it at some point.
It only plays with his charisma.
Hey-o.
Too many jokes.
Mr. Fidelity Charisma, I got
here. Oh, goodness. Alright, well, do you guys have anything else before we wrap it up?
I don't know how we can top charisma and looking at Andy Marshall's Wikipedia page for 5 minutes.
I don't think we can do much with it. So, let's wrap it up here. So, you just tuned into the first episode of the 7500 to Hold podcast.
Which needs a name.
Yeah, so if you've got any, throw us one in the comments there, because we'd love to have one. Also, if you have a band that wants to make us music,
either that or Andrew will just compose a tune on GarageBand.
It's your choice, commenters.
I'm the John Tesh of podcast.
So, that wraps it up for us. Drop your thoughts in the comments. Let us know what you want to hear next time. We'll be doing this next time sometime.
When we figure out how to really record.
So, you've been listening to Kirsten Schlewitz.
Bye-bye.
Gareth Simpson.
Yeah, bye.
Andrew Seasland. And me, Robert Lintott, here on the 7500 to Hold podcast, your number one source for creepy Andrew Marshall pictures and the Paul Swifts. Have a great day, guys.